You are listening to IP Management Voice, your podcast about the world of IP and IP management. We talk about the smartest minds in the knowledge economy so that you can learn from them. If you want to know more, you can subscribe to our newsletter and research the latest topics on our content platform, Dplex, with the world's most important experts on IP and IP management. The content featured in today's episode on the concept of dominant design comes from James Utterback.
All right, welcome to another deep dive with us. And you folks have sent us something really interesting to dig into this time.
Yeah, this looks like a fascinating one.
So it's a scientific paper by James Utterback.
Okay.
And it tackles this concept of a dominant design in industries, you know, like how certain products or designs end up becoming the standard, the go-to thing that everyone kind of rallies around.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And what's really cool is that Utterback didn't just like theorize about this. He and Fernando Suarez actually went and did this massive analysis across, get this, 8 major product categories, and they looked at them over a whole century, like 100 years of data.
Wow, that's some serious research.
So our mission today is to really unpack the key insights from Utterback's work, to understand like what are those patterns, how do industries typically evolve, and what role does this whole dominant design thing play in shaping that whole process?
Yeah, it'd be great to get a handle on that. It feels like something you kind of intuitively sense is happening in industries, but to have it laid out systematically like that.
Totally. And by the end, hopefully you'll have a better sense of how industries work, maybe even some clues about like the best times to enter a market if you were, you know, starting a business or something.
Yeah, or even just as an investor, trying to make sense of where things are headed.
Exactly. So to start things off, Utterback really breaks down the evolution of an industry into different phases. So let's dive into that first phase, the early days of a new industry. What did Utterback observe was happening there?
Well, he describes it as kind of a wild west, really. Oh. It's a period of intense experimentation.
Oh.
You see a ton of new companies popping up, all trying out different ideas, different product features, different configurations. It's like
what free-for-all.
Yeah, exactly. A free-for-all of innovation. You've got this real emphasis on what he calls product innovation.
Yeah.
It's all about like figuring out what works from a technical standpoint, but also what resonates with those early adopters who are willing to try new things.
So a lot of trial and error.
Tons of it. And the market is basically testing all these different approaches, seeing what sticks. It's a super fluid, dynamic period. Things are changing constantly.
It's almost like biological evolution, right? You've got all these different variations and then some survive, some don't.
It is. It's like natural selection for products.
Now, what Utterback found was that at some point, things start to converge. This dominant design starts to emerge.
Right.
So how does that transition happen? How do we go from this chaos to some sort of order?
Well, what's really interesting is that according to Utterback's analysis, this dominant design, it isn't usually like some completely radical brand new invention that comes out of nowhere.
Okay.
More often than not, it's actually like a synthesis. It pulls together the most successful bits and pieces from all those earlier products, the ones that actually worked, the ones that people were buying.
So it's like a refinement of what came before.
Yeah, a sort of best of compilation. And of course, it's shaped by the technology that's available, obviously. But it's also heavily influenced by the market. Like, what are customers responding to? What are they actually buying? And then, of course, there's the whole regulatory landscape to consider any rules or standards that might be in place.
So it's not necessarily the most technologically advanced design that wins out, but the one that hits that sweet spot, that balance between what's technically feasible, what customers want, and what the regulations allow.
Absolutely. It's that compromise that often wins the day.
Now, here's where things get really interesting. In the paper, Utterback highlights this fascinating trend. He says the number of firms in an industry, like the number of companies competing it, tends to actually peak right around the time that the dominant design emerges.
Right. That's a really key point.
Now, why would that be? Why would standardization lead to more companies jumping in, at least initially?
Well, think about it this way. When a dominant design starts to gain traction, it basically sends a signal to everyone who's been watching from the sidelines.
Ah.
It says, hey, this is what the market wants. This is the blueprint for success.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly you have a lot less uncertainty. And that's very attractive to new companies. They think, okay, now we know what to build. We know what to sell.
So it's almost like a gold rush.
Yeah, exactly. It's like everyone sees the gold and rushes in to stake their claim.
But I'm guessing this boom doesn't last forever, right? Because Utterback then talks about the shakeout phase.
Yeah, the shakeout. It's kind of a brutal reality check for a lot of those companies.
So what happens during this shakeout?
So once you have that dominant design, the nature of competition changes completely.
Okay.
It's no longer about coming up with these radical new product ideas like it was in the early phase.
Right.
It shifts to what Utterback calls process innovation. That basically means finding ways to produce that standardized product more efficiently.
Oh, so it's about optimizing the production process, making it cheaper, faster, better.
Exactly. And the companies that can't adapt, the ones that can't get their costs down, or that don't have the scale to compete on price, they start to struggle.
They can't keep up.
Nope. And what Utterback's research showed was that a lot of them end up going out of business. So the very thing that attracted all these companies, that clear dominant design, it ends up being the thing that drives a lot of them out.
That's a fascinating dynamic. So the dominant design, it kind of creates this boom, but then it also triggers this bust, this intense period of weeding out.
It's a real survival of the fittest situation.
And then eventually things start to settle down. We reach this phase of stabilization.
Right. And typically what you see is that the industry consolidates. You end up with just a handful of really big companies left standing. They're the ones who have survived the shakeout.
Okay.
They're usually offering pretty similar products, all based on that dominant design.
Right.
And their market shares, like how much of the market each company controls, those become pretty stable at this point. The focus shifts away from those big groundbreaking innovations to more incremental improvements, like tweaking the existing product, refining the production process. It's all about optimization and efficiency at this stage.
So it's less about revolution and more about evolution at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, now I know Utterback looked at all sorts of industries, like a wide range of them.
Mm-hmm.
But in the paper, he specifically mentions the typewriter industry.
Right.
Can we dive into that one as a concrete example to kind of see how this whole dominant design thing played out?
Oh, absolutely. The typewriter is a classic example of Utterback's model in action.
Okay.
He points to the 1906 Underwood Model 5.
Yeah.
That's considered to be the dominant design in that industry. It introduced some really key features that became standard across the board, like visible typing.
Oh, interesting.
I know it seems obvious now, but in the early days, a lot of typewriters actually hid the text as you typed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you couldn't see what you were writing until you, like, pulled the paper out. The Underwood Model 5 changed all that. It also introduced things like the tabulation key, which was a huge deal for businesses. And what's amazing is that, just like Utterback predicted, the number of typewriter manufacturers, it peaked right around that time. Then it went into a steep decline as everyone started copying the Underwood design.
So the typewriter industry followed that classic pattern. Early experimentation, dominant design emerges, a flood of new companies, then a shakeout, and then stabilization around that one design.
Textbook example.
Okay, now let's say you're a company and you're thinking, hey, we want to jump into a new industry. What would Utterback's analysis suggest about when the best time to do that might be?
Well, based on his research, especially looking at U.S. industries, he'd probably tell you to get in early, like before that dominant design takes hold.
Oh, interesting. So be a pioneer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because when you're early, you have a much bigger chance to influence the direction of the market. You can even be the one who shapes the dominant design. That can give you a huge advantage in the long run.
You get to set the standard.
Precisely. And that often translates into becoming a leader in that industry.
That makes sense. But I know Utterback also looked at Japanese companies, and he found some interesting differences there, right?
Oh, yeah. He found that some Japanese firms actually found success by entering the market after a dominant design had already been established.
Really?
Yeah, it was a different strategy. They weren't necessarily trying to be the first ones out there with a revolutionary product. They were more focused on, like, mastering the production process, becoming super efficient and producing a high-quality product at a lower cost.
So they were playing the long game.
Exactly. They entered later, but competed on, like, operational excellence. They were really good at execution.
So there are different paths to success. You can be the innovator, the one who sets the standard, or you can be the one who comes in later and just executes really, really well on an existing design.
It's like you have to know your strengths and play to them.
Now, what are some of the factors that Utterback identified as being really important in shaping which design ultimately becomes that dominant one?
Oh, there are several that he highlights. And it goes beyond just, like, how good the technology is itself.
Okay, yeah, more than just the tech.
Yeah, one thing he talks about is collateral assets. That's a fancy way of saying, like, what resources and capabilities does a company already have?
Oh, okay. Like the stuff they've built up over time.
Exactly. So things like, you know, do they have a strong distribution network? Can they get their product out to customers easily? Do they have other products or services that complement this new one? Or do they have specialized knowledge or expertise in this area?
Yeah, that all makes sense. If you've already got all that infrastructure in place, it's going to be much easier to push a new design, right?
Totally. You're already miles ahead.
What else did he find?
Well, something else that can have a huge impact is government regulations.
Oh, yeah, government regulations.
Governments can step in and mandate certain standards, or they can offer incentives like tax breaks or subsidies that favor one design over another.
Like picking winners and losers, in a way.
Yeah, in a way. Think about, like, environmental regulations, how they influence the adoption of certain types of engines. That's a perfect example.
Right. So the government can play a big role, even if it's not directly designing the product.
Absolutely.
And then there's what Utterback calls strategic maneuvering. That sounds like a very deliberate, almost like a chess move kind of thing.
Yeah, it's all about the strategic moves that companies make to gain an edge.
Okay.
So that could be forming alliances with other companies,
mm-hmm.
maybe acquiring a company that has a technology they need, or it could be about really smart marketing and branding, like shaping how the public perceives their design. It's about actively working to make your design the dominant one.
So it's not just about building a great product. It's also about, like, playing the game, making the right moves in the market.
Oh, absolutely. It's all part of the equation.
Now, there's this other concept that's often talked about with technology adoption called network externalities. Did Utterback touch on that at all?
Oh, for sure.
What are they, just to remind everyone?
Well, it's basically the idea that the value of a product increases as more people use it.
Oh, right, right. The more, the merrier.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Think about social media. Like, the more of your friends are on Facebook or Instagram or whatever platform it is, the more valuable it becomes for you.
Right, because then you can connect with more people.
Exactly. And that can create this powerful momentum towards a particular design. Because the more people adopt it, the more attractive it becomes for others. And it just keeps snowballing.
So that's another factor that can push a design towards dominance. The fact that its value increases as more people use it.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, and lastly, Utterback talks about the importance of the relationship between those who make the product, the producers, and those who use it, the users.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense.
He argues that having a close relationship with your customers is super important, like really understanding their needs, getting their feedback, and using that to improve your design.
Oh, yeah, because you don't want to build something that nobody wants.
Exactly. So that continuous feedback loop,
yeah.
That's what can really make or break a design.
Now, I know Utterback also made this distinction between different types of products. Like, he talked about assembled products versus, I think he called them non-assembled products.
Right, right.
What was the point he was making there?
He was basically saying that the idea of a dominant design, like a specific blueprint, it's really clear when you're talking about something like a car or a computer.
Okay.
Like, you can point to the arrangement of parts, the features, and say, that's the dominant design.
Right, right, the blueprint.
But with non-assembled products, things like chemicals or materials, it's a bit different.
Okay.
The dominance might not be about a specific design, but more about a specific way of making that thing, like a particular production process. He calls those enabling processes.
Oh, I see. So instead of a dominant design, you have a dominant way of making something.
Exactly. It's like the secret sauce. The key to success in those industries.
Now, reading through Utterback's paper, it felt like he was also posing some really interesting questions for future research, almost like he was leaving us with some open-ended things to ponder.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Which of those did you find particularly intriguing?
Well, one that really stood out was, like, how do dominant designs emerge in industries that are constantly changing?
Hmm.
You know, where the technology is evolving so rapidly and you have new generations of products coming out all the time.
Yeah, because his model seems to work best in industries that are maybe a bit more stable, right?
Right. So how does it apply to something like, say, the smartphone industry?
Yeah, or software where things move so quickly.
Exactly. That's a whole other ballgame. And he also raised this question about, like, what determines how many companies enter an industry in the first place? Like, why do some industries attract a flood of new entrants while others are more limited?
Yeah, that's a good question. And going back to that software example, did he say anything about whether the patterns of dominant design are different between hardware-focused industries and software-focused ones?
He didn't get into specifics, but it's definitely something he thought was worth exploring.
Yeah, I'd imagine there would be some pretty big differences there. And then he posed this question about whether a dominant design can ever collapse, not because of some new technology, but maybe just because tastes change or the market shifts.
Right. Could something that was once dominant become, like, obsolete or irrelevant, even without a major technological breakthrough? That's a really thought-provoking question.
It is, and that would obviously trigger a whole new wave of disruption and innovation.
Right. Back to that early phase of experimentation.
Now, did Utterback have any specific suggestions for like where future research on this topic should go?
He did. He suggested that maybe researchers should try to develop more sophisticated models that take into account all the different factors we've talked about, like market conditions, a company's resources, regulations, network effects, all of that to really understand why some companies thrive and others don't.
So a more holistic view, not just looking at the dominant design in isolation.
Right, because it's all interconnected. And he also thought it would be interesting to explore dominant designs through this lens of information economies. Basically, the idea is that as manufacturing becomes more flexible and customizable, users might actually have more power to influence which designs become dominant.
Oh, interesting. So instead of companies dictating what the dominant design is, it might be more driven by what users want.
Yeah, it's like a more democratic approach to innovation.
Now, before we wrap up, I wanted to touch on something we mentioned earlier. Those differences that Utterback observed between how US industries and Japanese industries evolved.
Oh, yeah.
Could you just walk us through some of those key distinctions again?
Sure. In the US, he noticed this pattern of like lots of small startups jumping into a new industry early on, followed by a pretty rapid consolidation once a dominant design emerged. So lots of churn, lots of change happening quickly.
Boom and bust, basically.
Yeah. Whereas in Japan, it was often more gradual. You'd see these big established companies entering the market later, often after the dominant design was already pretty clear.
Oh, interesting. So less about being the pioneer, more about coming in when things are more established.
Exactly. But he did point out that in more recent industries, things have been starting to look more similar. Like in the calculator industry or the disk drive industry, Japanese companies were entering earlier, and there was more of that rapid shakeout we saw in the US.
So maybe those differences are starting to blur a little bit as industries become more globalized.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, so to bring it all back, what are the key takeaways from Utterback's work? Like if you're a manager or someone making policy decisions, what are the big lessons?
Well, for managers, I think the big thing is understanding where your industry is in that life cycle. Are you in those early Wild West days? Or has a dominant design already emerged? And that should shape your strategy.
Right, so timing is everything.
Absolutely. And for policymakers, I think Utterback's framework gives them a really valuable tool for understanding how industries work. It helps them think about how regulations might affect innovation, how they can promote competition.
So it's not just about companies competing, it's also about governments setting the right conditions.
Exactly. It's all part of creating a healthy, innovative economy.
Okay, so the key takeaway for you, dear listener. Utterback's work on dominant designs gives us this really useful framework for understanding how industries go from this early phase of like crazy experimentation to this more mature phase of like standardization and stability. And it shows us how all sorts of factors, from technology to market forces to government regulations, all play a role in shaping that process.
Yeah, it's a great lens for understanding how innovation actually happens in the real world.
Now, here's something to ponder, building on Utterback's ideas. Think about some of the industries you interact with every day. Your smartphone, your car, maybe even the way you get your news or entertainment. What would you say is the dominant design in those industries right now? What factors do you think led to it becoming dominant, and what might eventually come along to disrupt it?
Oh, that's a great exercise. It really makes you think about the forces that shape the world around us.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We really appreciate you sending us this paper and giving us the chance to explore this fascinating topic with you. It was a great conversation.
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform DeepLex, please get in contact and let us know.